Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host for this evening, Ethan Elkind. If California were its own country, and some may argue that now it should be, we would be preparing to inaugurate our first female president next month. Instead, many in the Bay Area are experiencing anxiety over the impending inauguration of Donald Trump. What will a Trump presidency mean for the Bay Area and the rest of the state? How will actions taken in the first 100 days of his administration impact priority policy issues for our state, which are based on values such as protecting our environment, welcoming immigrants, and embracing multiculturalism? A few weeks after the election, President-elect Trump outlined a tentative agenda for the start of his administration. And an examination of his plans shows deep conflicts with policies in the Bay Area and California at large. For example, Trump promised to cancel environmental restrictions put in place by President Barack Obama, cut off federal funding from sanctuary cities, and repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare. Will any or all of these become a reality? And if so, what will it mean for the residents of our state? To discuss Trump's plans for his first 100 days in office and to answer questions and concerns about what that might mean for the Bay Area, I'm pleased to be joined in studio by David Campos, an attorney and member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors since 2008, representing District 9, which includes the Mission and Bernal Heights. Born in Guatemala, David immigrated to the United States with his family when he was 14 years old. Welcome, Supervisor Campos.
Thank you, Ethan.
And on the phone, we have Erwin Chemerinsky, founding dean and professor of law at the University of California Irvine School of Law, with a joint appointment in political science. Dean Chemerinsky is an expert in constitutional law and holds a title of Raymond Pike Professor of First Amendment Law. Welcome, Dean Chemerinsky.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great. And we're also joined by Jared Huffman, Democratic congressman, who since 2013 has represented California's 2nd District, which spans a coastline from the Golden Gate Bridge north to the Oregon border. Congressman Huffman serves on the House Committee on Natural Resources and the Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. Welcome, Congressman Huffman.
Good to be with you.
And we want to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. We'll open the phone lines in just about 20 minutes, and you can reach us then by dialing 415-841-4134. And if you want to weigh in right away, you can email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. You can also reach us by tweeting us at cityvisionskalw. What are your greatest concerns as you contemplate a Trump presidency? We want to hear your thoughts on this topic, so please do reach out. Well, Congressman Huffman, let's begin with you. Many people are imagining all sorts of policy issues that President-elect Trump might take up, but since you're there in Washington representing many of us here in the Bay Area by Congress, what are you hearing are going to be some of the priority issues that we should be on the lookout for the first 100 days of the Trump presidency?
Well, it's almost hard to prioritize what we should be looking out for. He has promised to basically take a wrecking ball to much of the environmental progress that we've made under the Obama administration. But, you know, you can start with things like public land protections. President Obama has made some important executive decisions that would take certain areas off limits to oil and gas exploration and development. It's not easy to undo all of those, but certainly many of them will be on the short list for President-elect Trump. And most recently, the Dakota Access Pipeline is a decision that has come from the Obama administration, adverse to the oil industry, and I think we can expect pretty quick action on that. Keystone XL, broader questions of where we go on climate change with the Paris Accord and other things will probably take a little bit longer to sort out.
Mm-hmm. And so on that front of environmental issues, what are the kinds of things that he can do unilaterally? You mentioned executive orders, and what are the things that the Congress is going to have to go along with to implement his agenda?
Well, when it comes to regulations that have actually been finalized under the Obama administration, it's not as simple as a new president just ending those. So, for example, we've got the Clean Power Plan that has been finalized, is being challenged currently in court. It's not simple for Trump to simply turn that off. Even if he were to direct the federal lawyers to stop defending it in court, there are interveners that have been granted status in the litigation who can continue to defend the plan. He would have to jump through a lot of regulatory hoops, and it would take many months But I'm sure that that's a high priority. There's another very controversial rulemaking called the Waters of the United States, or the Clean Water Rule, that will present a similar challenge for Trump. But there are other things that he can do very quickly. And so, you know, we're just going to have to see how he prioritizes those.
Mm-hmm. And just bringing it home for people in the Bay Area, you know, a lot of people in the Bay Area are interested, for example, in some of our clean energy, electric vehicle policies, and a lot of those are supported by federal tax credits. Do you see any possibility that Congress could do away with some of those, some of the support for the clean technologies that underlie a lot of California's climate program here in the state?
I think we need to be very vigilant about it. But, for example, the 5-year investment tax credit that has been so critical to wind and solar development and hopefully geothermal development, too, that's a very popular policy that is actually creating jobs in a lot of Republican districts and states. And so I don't think that is likely to change. Where we go at the end of that 5-year period, many of us had hoped that instead of new subsidies, we would at that point be ready to move toward carbon pricing in the form of a fee or a tax. That becomes much less likely, probably very unlikely, under the next administration.
Mm-hmm. And staying with you, Congressman Huffman, you mentioned public lands. What about our coastlines? Is there a prospect that he could be opening up the coastlines to more oil drilling?
Well, the good news in California is that in state waters, the state has foreclose that possibility, but it only goes out a few miles. And so, unfortunately, the answer is yes. We are vulnerable to new oil and gas leases that could be granted under President-elect Trump in federal waters.
Mm-hmm. And going to Dean Chemerinsky, staying on this issue of the environment and what the impact of Trump's policies might mean for folks in the Bay Area and statewide, since you're down at UC Irvine and certainly in the same state jurisdiction concerned about some of these issues, or folks down there might be, wondering what the constitutional-type claims might be made against some of California's programs that, you know, a Trump presidency might enable. Or is there a risk there that some of our programs might be preempted in some way through a Trump presidency?
That's exactly the potential constitutional issue. Where Congress has the authority to act, Congress has the power to preempt state laws. Generally, states have been able to set environmental standards stricter than federal law. And so if California wants to continue to impose much greater restrictions to limit greenhouse gas emissions, it's able to do so. However, if Trump and the Republican Congress want to keep states from doing this, and saying that state laws cannot be stricter than federal law, they could do that. I don't think there's any indication right now they want to go that far.
Mm-hmm. And Supervisor Campos, just wondering from your perspective on the Board of Supervisors, are there particular environmental policies in San Francisco that you are now concerned about that the federal government might undermine with a President Trump administration?
Well, I think that one of the big issues for San Francisco is our efforts to go 100% with clean energy. We can definitely see how the federal government could undermine those efforts. We have Clean Power SF in San Francisco, which essentially creates a consumer choice aggregation in San Francisco, makes that a reality. And I think that with the Trump presidency, you can see efforts to continue to rely on fossil fuels, which, I mean, I think that it's a very real threat. And it's not just the legal implications of for California, but are they going to try to cut some of the federal funding that has enabled us to pursue clean energy? I think that's a real concern.
And another question for Congressman Huffman on the issue of the environment. We talked a bit about energy and public lands. What about California's water policy? Federal funds, for example, to support the Delta water plan, or Trump criticism that water that's been cut off from farmers to benefit endangered species needs to be reversed. What are you hearing in terms of water policy, or what potential impacts might be there?
I think we can expect terrible, overreaching anti-environmental action from the next administration. And those that Mr. Trump has surrounded himself with so far for the Interior Department transition certainly would signal that. Mm-hmm. So the good news is we've been there before. In some ways, this will be a rerun of the George W. Bush administration. And we know that state law becomes ever more important because in California we have our own clean water legislation, we have our own Endangered Species Act, and so many of the things that a Trump administration will target will have a state law backstop, and it's going to become very important that our state water board, that our Cal Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Governor Brown and his successor really stand up for those values in the Delta and in other places.
Mm-hmm. And Dean Chemerinsky, let me throw it open to you. We've heard from the congressman about what he's very concerned about. I know there's other issues as well besides the environment. What are you keeping your eye on the most for those first 100 days from a Trump administration?
Well, I'm very concerned about who President-elect Trump is going to put on the United States Supreme Court. There's, of course, the vacancy created by Justice Scalia's death. And the question is he going to pick somebody who's more moderate, or is he going to pick somebody who's very far to the right? One of the names most frequently mentioned is William Pryor, a judge on the United States Court of Appeals, the 11th Circuit. He's even more conservative than Antonin Scalia was, and he would push the court even further to the right. And then the question will be, will the Senate fight back? Might three Republican senators join the Democrats to block someone like Pryor? Might the Democrats use a filibuster to block somebody like Pryor being confirmed to the Supreme Court?
And so what are the kinds of issues, then, that are most at stake? I mean, you mentioned replacing Scalia, so that wouldn't necessarily change the balance from what the public's been used to. But let's say he gets another pick, and you famously called on Justice Ginsburg to step down back in 2014 when the Democrats had both the White House and the Senate. But if, you know, one of those seats, the traditionally liberal seats, were to flip, what issues might be at stake then for the Bay Area and California and the country?
Since 1960, 78 years old is the average age at which a Supreme Court justice left the bench. There are three justices on the current court who are over 78. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 83. Anthony Kennedy is 80. Stephen Breyer turned 78 in August. If any one of those three leaves during the Trump presidency is replaced by a conservative, then, and this isn't hyperbole, there will be five votes to overrule Roe versus Wade. There will be five votes to eliminate all affirmative action. I think there would be five votes then to overrule the Supreme Court's decision in favor of marriage equality from June of 2015. So you're right, replacing Justice Scalia restores the ideological balance. It's the next justice, if that person's replaced by a conservative, that really can change the law in dramatic ways that affect all of us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully for the health and sake of those justices, it's not going to happen in the first 100 days of the Trump administration, but certainly something to keep an eye out. So, Supervisor Campos, I've been able to ask the other two panelists what they're thinking about. What are you thinking about for those first 100 days?
Well, I think everything that the congressman and that Dean Chemerinsky have said is really critical. But I think there are things that are even more immediate. And the thing about Trump is that we don't have to speculate about what he's going to do in his first 100 days. We actually already know what he's going to do. We know what he has said he's going to do. And what we're talking about is actions that are so radical that fundamentally change the very character of our country. And I actually think that we need to underscore the urgency of this. I mean, on the environmental issues that you've raised, just think about who he's thinking about putting as Interior Secretary. He's talking about Sarah Palin. I mean, you don't need to know a lot more beyond that to know. But in a way, we're talking about changing basic principles that go to the core of who we are as a country. You know, he is surrounding himself with people that are radicals and who are trying to turn back the clock, not only on the appointments to the Supreme Court, but on the basic freedoms of people who are living in this country. I'll tell you that as a gay Latino man, it's not just turning back the clock on same-sex marriage and a number of other things, but we're talking about deporting millions of people. You know, they're talking about 3 million people. That is going to have some very serious consequences for places like San Francisco, where we have 44,000 undocumented immigrants that are living in San Francisco. He has already said that within 100 days, he's going to make sanctuary cities like San Francisco pay for being sanctuary. And are we going to actually stand up to him? And it's not just a matter of waiting to have Trump do what he said, what he's going to do. We have to get ready for that fight. And actually, Rebecca Solnit in The Guardian talked about sort of the history around dealing with totalitarian regimes. And it's actually Timothy Snyder, who's a scholar on that issue, was talking about what happens when you have someone like Trump historically. People just kind of go along with that. And you know, he talked about anticipatory obedience. And what we need, you know, this is what Rebecca Solnit was saying, is we need anticipatory disobedience. We need to push back and make sure that this presidency lasts no more than 4 years. And we have to be willing to fight him at every single turn. It's not just the environment. It's immigration. It's health care. It's choice. It's public safety, police reform. You name it, he's on the wrong side of every issue.
So, Supervisor Campos, what would you recommend that the city do then in those first 100 days, or at least in the aftermath of those 100 days, to do what you're describing?
Well, there's a debate that's going on, and I'll tell you that there is a difference of opinion. You know, take the issue of immigration. We and the elected family said, you know, we're proud to be a sanctuary. But even though we agree on that principle, there are people, Mayor Lee right now, it's not clear where he really is. The Chronicle, Assembly Member David Chu are taking the position that, you know, we don't really know what Trump is going to do, so let's wait and see. Let's not take any steps until he acts. I fundamentally disagree with that, because I think that if we take that position, by the time he does something, which he will do something, it will be too late. So on the issue of immigration, I actually have proposed with Jeff Adachi, our public defender, that we actually fund universal representation for the 44,000 undocumented immigrants that live in San Francisco, because we know that he is going to begin deportations, and if we're not ready by giving them that universal representation, by the time we do get ready, many of them will have been deported. And so I actually think that with someone like Trump, who is ultimately a bully, that you have to push back and actually be proactive instead of waiting for him to make the first move.
And Congressman Huffman, what are you hearing is likely to be happening in those first 100 days on this issue of immigration?
Well, there are a number of Obama administration policies that Trump can simply change on day one. So that could include policies related to the Deferred Action Program, and we've got a lot of vulnerable dreamers out there that could see immediate repercussions from a policy shift.
And so those are children who were brought here as immigrants but have grown up here, and this is the only country they really know, right?
Correct. Correct. We know that he's promised to try to establish a Muslim registry. Now, I don't know how seriously he will follow through on that, but, you know, there was a program set up, authorized by Congress, in fact, in the wake of 9/11, that created a registry of sorts for folks who were primarily Arab, Muslim majority, folks from African, South Asian countries. And it led to a whole bunch of people visiting this country who were subject to serious due process violation. It functioned as effectively a Muslim registry. President Obama abandoned that program, to his credit, in 2011. But the regulatory framework, the authorizations for it, are still there. And so one of the things my colleagues and I are urging him to do in his final days as president is to formally dismantle that regulatory framework, to at least require a Trump administration to start from scratch, putting the regulations and the policy guidance in place if he intends to go down this path.
Mm-hmm. And on the subject of registering Muslims or having Muslims register in some sort of national database, Dean Chemerinsky, is this something that's even constitutional? I mean, we know that something like this happened with interning Japanese Americans. This is obviously different than internment, but seems like a similar type of program, which I know raised a lot of constitutional issues. So are there concerns that he's going to face those similar types of issues with the registry?
I think it would be clearly unconstitutional to say that one group, because of its religion, has to register. I think both denies equal protection of the law and also infringes free exercise of religion. If there's any basic principle of the Constitution, it's that the government can't assume that somebody's more dangerous because of his or her race or national origin or religion. You're right that the Supreme Court in 1944 upheld the evacuation of Japanese Americans during World War II, but there's no Supreme Court case in recent memory that's been more repudiated and criticized than that decision from the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at kalw.org. Tonight we're discussing how actions taken during the first 100 days of President-elect Trump's administration may impact the Bay Area. Joining me in studio is Supervisor David Campos, member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors since 2008, and by phone, Erwin Chemerinsky, founding dean and professor of law at the University of California, Irvine School of Law, with a joint appointment in political science, and Jared Huffman, Democratic congressman, who since 2013 has represented California's 2nd District. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. What questions do you have for our guests about Trump's proposed agenda? Which part of President-elect Trump's plan gives you the greatest cause for concern? The number to join, number to call to join this conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And you can also reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. Well, staying with this topic of immigration, Congressman Huffman, you mentioned a number of things that President-elect Trump, once he's sworn in, can do on his own. What about his famous pledge to build a wall and have Mexico pay for it? What are you hearing as a possibility there in Congress to go along with that that wall?
Well, I think that wall is not going to happen. And I think many of Trump's supporters don't really expect that he'll be able to follow through with it. Nobody seriously believes that Mexico is going to somehow pay for it, and I don't think that this Congress, certainly there continue to be some fiscal hawks around here, I don't think they're going to sign off on a multi-billion dollar project like that. Mm-hmm. That said, I think there will be some pretty early action directed at border security and border enforcement that could include some physical structures, but you're not going to see a great wall spanning our southern border.
And now let's go to the phone lines now. We have RJ from San Francisco. RJ, welcome to City Visions.
Oh, thank you for the show. I live in federally subsidized housing here in San Francisco, and I'm wondering if there are any protections if given that we're a sanctuary city, Trump should decide to cut off federal funding.
So this is a great question for Supervisor Campos. I'm imagining you're hearing maybe similar people asking you about this question. What is your response?
Well, I mean, I think that's a question mark in the sense that we have said we're a sanctuary, and I think that we believe that and are committed to that. But the question is, what happens when the rubber meets the road, and the federal government threatens to take away our federal funding? If you're looking at what San Francisco gets from the federal government, we're talking about $1.5 billion in money. And so I am hopeful that Mayor Lee, that the Board of Supervisors will remain committed. But I will tell you that I am a little worried, because even on the issue of sanctuary right now, there is a plan to spend money on legal representation. And even though the mayor came forward and said, we want to be a sanctuary, right now they're kind of being a little iffy about whether or not they would support it. And so I hope that we mean what we say and we say what we mean. But I want to talk about the wall, because I hope that the congressman is absolutely right, and I hope that that's true. But I also I don't want to be an alarmist here, but I also know that a lot of people said, Trump is not going to win. We don't need to worry about that. So I think that we need to right now begin to build what I call a wall of resistance, because even though we might be right in terms of violations of constitutional law, by the time we get to the U.S. Supreme Court and have the Supreme Court find along the ways that the dean suggested, so much damage may be done by people like Jeff Sessions and some of the other people that he has surrounded himself. We need to fight now, and one way to fight is to ask the Senate to make sure that some of the worst nominations that he had made do not go through, so that these people don't use the levers of power to do the damage that they could do.
And, of course, if it goes to the Supreme Court, if it gets to the point where he's got his two picks, then he presumably would have some friendly justices, which actually leads me to want to talk to or ask Dean Chemerinsky his take on this issue of whether or not the federal government can actually withhold federal funds from San Francisco. I've heard some conflicting things around this. Dean Chemerinsky, is this an issue that you've studied and can sort of advise cities what they might be in for?
Yes, in the sense that the Supreme Court has said that Congress can put strings on grants so long as the conditions are clearly stated, so long as they relate to the purpose of the program, and so long as they are not unduly coercive. And so if the federal government wants to say to a city, you can have federal funds only so long as you cooperate with ICE, it can only be those funds that relate to immigration. It couldn't be all federal funds. Also, it can't be unduly coercive. People forget that the Supreme Court in 2012 struck down key provisions of the Affordable Care Act concerning Medicaid by saying it was too coercive of state governments. And so I think if the Congress decides to try to put enormous financial pressure on cities with regard to immigration, there can be lawsuits based on the principles that the conservatives on the Supreme Court have previously articulated.
So that could be some welcome news then for cities, or at least maybe not super welcome, but not awful news. So let's go back to the phone lines. We have Virian on the phone. Virian, welcome to City Visions.
Hello?
Yes, hi. Is this Virian?
This is Karen.
Oh.
So yeah, okay. So actually, the gentleman just said the things that you can do now is to call your senator, write your senator, and tell them not to confirm his choices, inappropriate choices. But also, we can also call our congresspeople. We can call the White House every single day. There's a person there, or write letters to say the things that we know about Trump, like that he has lots of shares in the Dakota Pipeline, which is a conflict of interest. So he should be exposed for his business dealings that he's engaging with right now before he even gets in the White House that are of conflict of interest, so that he should be put into the spotlight, and people should be calling their senators and their congresspeople. They should find out about it and call up and complain about what they don't like about it, so that he is made aware that the public out there knows what he's doing. So that's just kind of one way to fight back.
Sure. Well, Karen, we've got a member of Congress on the show tonight. So, Congressman Huffman, what do you say to folks like Karen who want to know what they can best do to counter some of Trump's actions that they disagree with?
Well, I think she's right in that we have got a fight on our hands. He is going to go places where we're just going to have to stand our ground and fight back in every way possible. The firewall in the Senate is going to be really critical. President Trump and House Republicans will probably be able to move any legislation they want through the House, provided that they can get on the same page. But there are a number of issues of great concern where I think they probably will. The real question is, will we be able to require 60 votes on some or all of these things in the Senate, and then have Democratic champions or even some independents or moderate Republicans who will put the holds in place and oppose a cloture vote so that we can try to make these things bipartisan and reasonable.
Mm-hmm. And sticking with this issue of immigration, if there are mass deportations, how would that work? And is that going to create a shortage of workers in some of our industries? So, Supervisor Campos, is this something you've looked at, sort of the mechanics of how a mass deportation might come about?
Well, that's actually something that we are looking into. And, in fact, the proposal that we have included, which is a $5 million proposal to provide legal representation, but to also have a sort of a rapid response team that will provide legal representation to some of these folks is part of it. But this is what's so scary about what we're talking about and why it's so critical for us to step forward. I can tell you right now, because I've spoken to many constituents, people are terrified of what this means come January 20th. One question: will they be able to actually trust law enforcement? Can they report crime, or is the police department, the sheriff's department, are they going to be cooperating with the federal government? our schools. I've spoken to parents who are actually afraid of taking their kids to school for fear that something would happen. Now, we know we have Plyler v. Doe, and Dean Chemerinsky can tell you constitutionally, you know, kids have a right to access a school, but there is so much fear. I've spoken to our superintendent of schools, Myung Lee. They're having conversations with some of the young kids who are old enough to hear the rhetoric, and even though they themselves are U.S. citizens, are saying, am I going to be deported because I'm of Latino descent, and what's going to happen to my parent? So I think it's important to understand that the conversations that Trump is having with the people around them are not just about deporting people, but actually to intimidate people and to create fear in these communities. And that's why it's so critical for us at the local, state, and federal level to come forward. And I'm very grateful you have a congressman, Congressman Huffman, and others who are doing that, but we need more of that.
Mm-hmm. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing how actions taken during the first 100 days of President-elect Trump's administration may impact the Bay Area. So joining me is David Campos, member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, Erwin Chemerinsky, founding dean and professor of law at the University of California Irvine School of Law, and Jared Huffman, Democratic congressman representing California's 2nd District. We invite you to call in. That number again to call and join the conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. 841-4134, or email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org, or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. You can also reach us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. So let's go back to the phone lines to Virian. So Virian, welcome to City Visions. You're on the air.
You know, this is interesting. Donald Trump got voted by the majority of the people. Why are they backing up on this thing? You know, you go say, go to the Congress. Well, I went to Barbara Lee. I'm a businessman here. And she did nothing. Nancy Pelosi did nothing. And nobody said a word about Facebook and all these people like Zuckerberg who just opened the door for ISIS to get all their information right through them. And we got Muslims coming here, killing people at unbelievable. I mean, they can come in here and just radicalize and kill people.
So do you have a question for the panelists? I mean, certainly Trump got elected. I don't think anyone's disputing that. We're curious if you have questions about how his first 100 days might affect.
Why are they backing up on this immigration? The law says you cannot be in the United States undocumented. Now, if you came in here and had kids, that's your problem. You got to read what the laws are, and you got to understand why you came here.
So that's actually an interesting comment about immigrants. So we're talking about people who have come here illegally. And Dean Chemerinsky, on this subject, do these illegal immigrants, if they are subject to mass deportation, do they have any constitutional rights? I mean, what would be the process in a constitutional way to actually do these proposed mass deportations?
Well, if somebody is not lawfully in the United States, the government has the ability to deport them. The Obama administration deported a lot of undocumented individuals. There is a requirement that individuals be given some form of due process, need to make sure that the person really is undocumented before deporting the person as being undocumented. The other thing to remember is that the Obama administration, by executive order, did give deferred deportation status to individuals. These were the Dreamers we were talking about, the deferred action of childhood arrivals, executive action. And the question is President Trump going to rescind DACA? Is he going to take away work permits from people? There are 11 million undocumented individuals in the United States. Is he going to break up families, or is he really going to just do what he said and try to target those who are criminals who have criminal backgrounds? So all of this is uncertain, but I agree with the other two speakers. We have to prepare for this now. We have to be ready to provide the representation for individuals. I think one of the things that law schools need to be doing is training lawyers to be able to represent undocumented individuals before the proceedings begin.
Mm-hmm. And Supervisor Campos on this subject?
Thank you. I think we have to be very careful not to adopt the rhetoric and some of the terminology. I think, you know, we're talking not about illegal immigrants. We're talking about undocumented people. And I also think that what the dean said is really critical. we're not talking about making sure that people stay in San Francisco. What we're talking about is making sure that their due process rights are protected, and the way we ensure that is by giving them legal representation. And in terms of, you know, immigration and illegal immigration, the same people that rail against undocumented people and they focus on the Hispanic, the Latino immigrant, say nothing about the fact that Mrs. Trump actually broke immigration law, right? And so what makes it okay for her? Is it because she's from Europe? And the fact is that our economy is dependent on the work of these people. And I can tell you, as someone who came to this country and undocumented myself, we came here. My parents brought me here as a kid in search of a better life. And the vast majority of these people are people who, but for the fact that they broke immigration law, are law-abiding, productive members of society. And the fact is that that gets lost in this rhetoric. And can you imagine what our agricultural sector, what our economy look like without the work and effort of these people?
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the phone lines. We have Armand from San Francisco. Armand, welcome to City Visions. You're on the air.
Yes. We were talking about trying to block things in Congress. I'm just wondering if the Republicans would do something like hold a secret midnight meeting that Democrats would know about it and ram things that way, because I'm certainly convinced that the Republicans will do anything to get their way.
So I think it's an interesting question for Congressman Huffman. Congressman, What do you see as a sort of Republican response to the Trump presidency? We know that the caucus was divided when it came to nominating a president. Do you see any sort of cracks in that? Do you see other sort of interesting strategies or tactics they might try that people should be aware of in advance?
Well, they will push the envelope of the rules of the House and the rules of Congress, and as they do already. I mean, I'm dealing with a fire drill today on California water because literally in the 11th hour of the 114th Congress with no deliberation and nobody ever seeing this legislation, Kevin McCarthy has decided to drop a 91-page California water bill into a completely unrelated piece of legislation involving Corps of Engineers project authorization, WERDA. And so that stuff happens all the time. But, will they be able to hold secret sessions at midnight, things like that? No. We've got too many eyes on them, and we will be right there in any session that convenes. So I'm not so worried about them acting without us, but I think we can expect them to use tricks like budget reconciliation, which is basically a way for House Republicans to jam all kinds of things into any budget-related bill. Those things will be put in as riders at the last minute. There will probably not be a lot of transparency or deliberation. And it's a way for them to get them through on a 51-vote majority over in the Senate and avoid filibustering and cloture. So, we're going to see a lot of tricks, I think, in the months and years ahead. But we have some ways to counter them, hopefully.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Armand, for that question. Back to the phone lines. Ken from San Francisco. Ken, welcome to City Visions.
Hi, I'm sympathetic with the immigrants here afraid of being deported, and the focus is often on them, but I am wondering where the focus is on the government of Mexico. In America, we hear very little about their names. I mean, many people can perhaps name President Nieto, but you really don't hear about the weasels in their government. We've had hundreds of women murdered in the Women of Juarez with no investigation, complete inaction. We have a government of Mexico that is content to allow the passage of other Central Americans through their country to get to the U.S., and they're very happy to have their citizens come to the U.S. for work to send cash money back to their family members back in Mexico. I'm just curious, where is the focus on the Mexican government? What are they doing? obviously they've done nothing in terms of economic development to help their own people.
Well, I think it's you're certainly describing a lot of the reasons why people would want to come to the United States from places like Mexico if they're trying to escape violence and other things. Supervisor Campos, did you want to comment on that?
Well, I mean, I think that there is a responsibility on both sides of the border in terms of that. But I think that there has to be, if there is a conversation, it has to be from a place of mutual respect. And I think that having a president that's talking about building walls between two countries is not really conducive to having the kinds of discussions that are needed to change the larger macroeconomic forces, which, by the way, you know, come from some pretty bad choices that have been made by the U.S. Itself, NAFTA and others. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see Donald Trump being the kind of president that would actually make that happen, because as he tries to bully himself, and he's kind of a bull in a china shop right now in terms of how he's handling foreign policy.
Maybe quite literally with some of his recent comments about China. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing how actions taken during the first 100 days of President-elect Trump's administration may impact the Bay Area. Joining me in the studio is Supervisor David Campos from the City and County of San Francisco, Dean Erwin Chemerinsky from University of California Irvine School of Law, and Congressman Jared Huffman from California's 2nd District. We invite you to please call in with questions. The number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. Also, feel free to reach us by Twitter at cityvisionskalw. Congressman Huffman, there's an issue we haven't talked about, which is health care and the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, Trump ran on a proposal to repeal and replace, or replace and repeal, depending on what's in the headlines. What are you hearing about the prospects for further reform or repeal and replace for Obamacare, Affordable Care
right.
Act?
Well, I think this is a first 100 days item for sure, because both President-elect Trump and the Republicans in Congress have raised expectations to this point where they have to produce something right away, early in the next Congress. But in a way, it's like the dog that finally caught the car. How they go about repealing or dismantling the Affordable Care Act is a lot more complicated than just making a political promise. And so they honestly are making this up as they go along. They're not sure how they're going to do it. The one thing that's clear is they can't just revoke it and have that take effect immediately. There would be massive disruption in the healthcare marketplace, and millions of people's lives would be disrupted because they would abruptly lose insurance. So I think even most Republicans are acknowledged that they've got to come up with something to kick in when these provisions that they repeal go away, but they're a long way from agreement on what that would be. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned. But it's not so simple. You can't simply do away with the individual mandate and all these exchanges and decide that you want to cherry pick and hang on to things like young people staying on their parents' plans and people being guaranteed coverage even if they have pre-existing conditions, no lifetime caps, things like that. The marketplace and the risk pools just don't work if you pick and choose that way.
And Dean Chemerinsky, there were some very well-known constitutional challenges to the Affordable Care Act, legal challenges that made it up to the Supreme Court. Do you foresee any constitutional issues if there is an effort to roll back the Affordable Care Act?
I don't see constitutional issues. I see human issues. I very much agree with the congressman. There are 20 million Americans who have health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. What will happen to them if it gets repealed? They're all of the people who have insurance through their parents' policies, because the Affordable Care Act allows individuals to have health insurance under their parents' policy at age 26. What happens to them? The person who's been nominated to be Secretary of Health and Human Services wants to repeal not just the Affordable Care Act, but Medicare and Medicaid. Is that even a possibility? And what would that mean for the tens of millions of people who get health care that way? So there are just enormously important issues here, and it is for the first 100 days. but I'm not sure it's going to be constitutional issues.
Mm-hmm. And Supervisor Campos on health care?
Yeah, that's a very real issue. And it's not just the fact that it could be repealed. I mean, that would be a horrible, tragic outcome. But the things that they can do short of repeal. And there are a number of regulations that are in place that actually have helped places like San Francisco. San Francisco had universal health care because of Tom Amiano even before the Affordable Care Act. But what the Affordable Care Act has done is has enabled high cost of living cities like San Francisco to subsidize and supplement the coverage that was already in place. So even if they don't repeal it, there are many things they can do to keep thousands of San Franciscans from coverage. So it is a very real issue that goes beyond just repeal, but what they can do before that. And because they have someone who is basically, if they approve, running this agency with the hope of undermining it, it's pretty scary. Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Randy, welcome to City Visions. Thank you for calling in.
You know, I don't want to upset anybody by saying I'm a truck driver and I drive from one side of the U.S. to the other. And what you're saying and the people that are talking here in the city of San Francisco, you have to understand, you are in a bubble. You're a very small area within the United States. Again, I don't want to upset anybody, but as you cross the Midwest and you cross Texas and a lot of the states on the East Coast where people have been out of work for years, they think that Donald Trump is godsend, that he is the best thing since hot dogs and hamburgers. So when people sit back in San Francisco and say, well, we have to do this, well, they have to understand just exactly what part of the United States they're in.
So, Randy, I appreciate the comment. Unfortunately, the sound quality is not great, but we did hear what you had to say, and I think certainly a lot of Democrats are well aware that they have trouble outside of the cities. I think, you know, while there are small geographic areas, of course, that's where the majority of the population lives and where Hillary Clinton was able to get a majority popular vote. But Congressman Huffman, you know, what's your take on this issue, this concern, criticism of Democrats just have sort of lost touch with these wide swaths of voters out in the you know, non-urban areas of the United States?
Well, I think Randy makes a great point, actually, and in some ways listening to him articulate that is like many of the conversations that I'm having with colleagues within our Democratic caucus from different parts of the country right now. There's sort of post-mortem going on among House Democrats and Senate Democrats, I'm sure. But I think it's important to remember this. We failed to attract a lot of working class voters in the Midwest and other places that have been mainstay Democratic voters for a long, long time. Clearly, that's a message to us that we need to sharpen our economic focus, that we need to not take these folks for granted. We also don't need to choose, I think, between connecting with these Rust Belt Midwest working class voters and also protecting the values that are represented in places like San Francisco and the coast. And it's not a bubble. There's a huge part of America that's on those coasts, and California is a nation state that is a pretty big and terrific bubble, in my opinion, if we're going to call it a bubble. So I guess I want to push back against the idea that we have to choose. We need to do both. We need to hang on to these values of diversity, of environmental leadership, climate leadership, civil rights and civil liberties. We want to be a humane society that welcomes immigrants. But we also want to connect with and not take for granted those working class folks that we've always had with us on economic grounds. And frankly, we are the best thing they've got when it comes to their economic interest. They just lost sight of that, I think, in this election, and we've got to get it back.
Mm-hmm. I want to move to a different issue. Prop 64 passed in this recent election to legalize recreational marijuana, but President-elect Trump has nominated to run the Justice Department a man, Jeff Sessions, currently Senator of Alabama, who is very outspoken against marijuana. And a lot of pro-legalization marijuana advocates are fear that this will lead to a federal crackdown on state marijuana laws. Dean Chemerinsky, what are the federal issues here that could come into play? What are the tools the Justice Department could use against these state laws?
California can decide, as it did, that it's not going to punish possession of small amounts of marijuana, but that doesn't create an exemption from federal law. Federal law under the Controlled Substance Act makes it a crime to possess even the smallest amount of marijuana. So the Justice Department could decide to more aggressively enforce marijuana law. Also, the Justice Department could try to take the position that laws like California's Prop 64 are preempted by federal law because they interfere with achieving a federal objective. The Obama administration made the conscious choice not to make a preemption argument when Washington and Colorado had initiatives to legalize possession of small amounts of marijuana. Given Jeff Sessions' position on this, if he's confirmed, might they try to take the position then that Prop 64 is simply preempted by federal law?
That would be a major reversal here in the state. Supervisor Campos, did you want to comment on this issue of marijuana and federal regulation?
Well, I mean, I think that's where some of the issues of local control and state control come into play, because if the conservative Republicans really mean what they say, they should let California, you know, deal with the issue on its own. I do think, by the way, that on the question that the gentleman who's a truck driver who called, those of us on the progressive side of the Democratic Party believe that part of the big a big part of the problem was that we lost sight of how our message is not resonating with working class. And quite frankly, one of the reasons is that you have a connection between the Democratic Party, at least the people who have been running the party, and these big corporations. And you have these corporate Democrats who are in many respects out of touch with working class people. And that's why Bernie Sanders, who I think, you know, should be the model, the standard bearer for the Democratic Party, resonated with so many people. We need to go back to our roots so that the Democratic Party is seen as the voice of the working class in this country.
So there's another issue that President-elect Trump had brought up related to infrastructure spending, which I know there's a lot of bipartisan support for. Congressman Huffman, what are you hearing in terms of the prospects of a federal infrastructure bill and what that might look like and how that might affect California, specifically here in the Bay Area?
All right. A trillion-dollar infrastructure plan is what President-elect Trump has promised in his first 100 days. But we haven't gotten a lot of detail on what that is. And so you've heard Democrats like me and even Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren say, you know, that's an area where we may be able to work with the new president. But we've got to see the details, because if this is simply some repatriation scheme of overseas corporate earnings and a tax holiday on those earnings and then a whole bunch of tax credits for corporate interests here at home to get them to do capital projects that they were probably already going to do anyway, then you're really not creating new jobs. You're really not addressing our terrible backlog of public infrastructure needs. So we really need to see the details. And a whole bunch of tax credits for the people that don't need them is not going to cut it. We need to see good old Keynesian programming and infrastructure investments. And if that's something that President-elect Trump is interested in, he'll find a lot of bipartisan support.
And do you think it's likely, that given that his base, as we just heard from that caller, is outside of these urban areas, do you think it's likely that that infrastructure development might end up going more towards those areas and leave some of these the cities out?
Well, if it's just a whole bunch of tax cuts, those rural areas are not going to see new infrastructure projects because they don't pencil out. They don't make profits for private interests. Mm-hmm. So it really has to be public infrastructure with public spending. Now, Trump has just sort of given mixed signals on this. On one occasion, I believe he indicated, look, interest rates are at these historic lows. This is a great time to borrow money and sink it into infrastructure. Now, that sounds pretty good to many Democrats, because that is, you know, Keynesian infrastructure spending. But in other times, he suggested that you do it all through tax incentives, and that's not going to cut it.
Mm-hmm. And Supervisor Campos, are there particular projects or transit infrastructure type spending that you could see at risk now with the new administration?
Well, absolutely. I represent San Francisco on the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, and I can tell you that the Republican Congress has been unwilling to make investments in public transit and other public infrastructure projects. We know that Mitch McConnell has actually sort of thrown cold water on the idea of investing in infrastructure. So maybe there is some common ground there. But I'll tell you, that I'm not so sure that that will happen. Look at who he nominated for Treasury Secretary. He's basically the foreclosure king of the country. Based on the people that he surrounded himself, it seems that the financial policies that he's going to pursue are basically pro-corporate. And it remains to be seen, but I'm very skeptical.
Mm-hmm. And there's another issue of trade, which Trump, obviously talked a lot about during the campaign. Dean Chemerinsky, what are the options for a president in terms of renegotiating some of these international trade agreements?
I guess the most important thing to remember is that a president can unilaterally rescind treaties or executive agreements. There was a Supreme Court case in the 1970s when President Jimmy Carter rescinded the United States Treaty with Taiwan. Senator Barry Goldwater sued and argued that just like the Senate has to approve the making of a treaty, so should the Senate have to approve the rescission of a treaty. The Supreme Court ruled against Senator Goldwater and said that no court can stop the president from rescinding a treaty. President George W. Bush rescinded the anti-ballistic missiles treaty in that regard. So when it comes to things that are treaties or executive agreements, the president has broad latitude. On the other hand, anything that's done by statute would require repeal by Congress.
Mm-hmm. And we've got an email just a minute or two left, email from Irene, who asks, how would folks in the Rust Belt feel if Medicare went away? Don't they need it and Social Security as much as we do? Congressman Huffman, last word from you, given our time. What are the prospects there for reform on that, on those big entitlement programs?
I think that's a great point. And the supervisor mentioned that Dr. Tom Price, who's been nominated to the key cabinet position that would oversee these reforms that Trump hopes to move forward, is a longtime fan of voucherizing Medicare, fundamentally changing the Medicare guarantee. The last time Republicans tried to do that, Democrats were very successful in reaching out to seniors all over this country and moving on to actually win a whole bunch of seats in a midterm election. So in some ways, my Democratic colleagues and I in Congress are saying, make my day. Mm-hmm. If you want to take on Medicare, because that's one of the ways we're going to reconnect with those people in the heartland who've always been with Democrats, and I think we'll soon see they need to be with Democrats again.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of issues that we've covered tonight, a lot of issues certainly for the Bay Area to be looking out for in the first 100 days of a very unprecedented type of administration. So that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were David Campos, member of San Francisco Board of Supervisors since 2008, representing District 9, Erwin Chemerinsky, founding dean and professor of law at University of California Irvine School of Law, and Congressman Jared Huffman from California's 2nd Congressional District. Thank you all so much for joining me this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was Debbie Kennedy, and tonight's show was produced by Chris Nooney. And a call out to you, our listeners. City Visions is proud to be celebrating its 25th anniversary on KALW. On next week's show, we will look back at some of the defining moments in Bay Area history and culture over the last 25 years, and we want to hear from you. Which local people, events, and ideas have most influenced you in our region since City Visions debuted in December 1991? How has the Bay Area changed over the last quarter century? Send your ideas to cityvisions@kalw.org. That's cityvisions@kalw.org. We look forward to hearing from you about what should be included in our 25th anniversary show next Monday, December 12th, hosted by our City Visions co-host, Joseph Pache. So this is Ethan Elkind. Thank you so much for listening. Good night, and have a great week.